Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Thursday. I did the show last Thursday. Thanks for everybody that supported it. It was the year in review for 2019. But I'm back. I am back. Life got in the way as far as Tuesday. We're back, though, in a shortened show. I do have to work at the bar tonight, so I won't be on for 3 hours or nothing like that, but like I said, we are back here at the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. Welcome back. It's 2020. Of course, the last time I spoke with you, it was 2020, wasn't it? So anyway, you know, there's nothing to recap. I mean, sure, we're going to talk a little bit. I guess you could say we're going to review, minorly anyway, the Crawford-Spence Twitter beef. It's funny. They beefed on Twitter, and then they called and kissed and made up. It was quite a cute little thing. But anyway, like I said, we are going to preview. That's where we're going to start. We're going to start previewing with Jesse Hart and Joe Smith Jr. returning to fight Clarissa Shields, Jared Enos, Munguia, and Sullivan. There's a variety of fights that we'll talk a little bit about. We'll preview that. Then we'll go over some news, whether, like I said, it's the Crawford Spence stuff, whether it's about Shakur Stevenson's next fight, whether it's about Josh Taylor, who news broke not all that long ago that Taylor is with Top Rank now, which is good news, but maybe bad news potentially because, hey, it's boxing. So the former promoter may not be on board. Let's put it that way. Koznoski had an opponent yesterday. We thought anyway, now there's a different opponent. We'll talk a little bit about that. We also got some information back for Gervonta Davis's fight as well. A lot of talk about that, the ticket sales in the gate. And, you know, of course, it's a PDC event. So they're going to, people are going to definitely talk about, how many tickets sold in this, that, and the other. So there's a variety of stuff that we'll cover. No doubt about it. If this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. It streams live at Archives. It's basically the headquarters. However, you don't have to just listen to it on Blog Talk, right? You can listen to it on Apple Podcasts. In fact, if you rate and review the show there, it helps with the visibility. Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found across the board as well, including iHeartRadio. In fact, if you use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or TuneIn, you can find both platforms there. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. And real quick, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have and you feel like you want some sort of cable package, but you don't want to pay $200 for it, I got something you may want to take a gander at. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's streaming cable. I use it myself. They do have a 7-day free trial. The plans start as low as $50 a month. There's no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. And for boxing fans, it looks like Showtime based on their second card in the Clarissa Shields and the Showbox. And it looks like they're going to have a better year. Right now, that's $11 on AT&T TV right now. Or TV Now, I should say. and it's available across the country. It's right here in Minneapolis. You got chunks of California, Florida, New York, Texas, all the way up to the Northwest in Seattle and Tacoma, St. Louis in Missouri, Topeka, Wichita as well. It's a variety of areas that the AT&T TV Now streaming service is available. You just go to the website, Google it, and put your little, you know, put the zip code in, and you can find out if you can get that service. Anyway, like I said, we're going to talk a little bit about The Weeknd, right? Not the band. Or not, well, do you call that a band? It's really just one dude, right? I mean, I know he's got a band, but I'll just shut up about that. Like I said, the fight that really stands out on paper is Joe Smith Jr. and Jesse Hart on ESPN, right? I think that's a really good fight. It's a good crossroads mid-level fight. These guys are right on that mid-level, solid fighters. They both need a nice win, right? They definitely both need a nice win. It's going to be a good fight. I'd assume it would be an all-action fight. You know, if you look at Joe Smith Jr., you know, he did fight not all that long ago. Was that his last fight with Dimitri Bivol? I think so. No, yeah, it was. It was his last fight. It was, well, coming on a year ago, I believe. Let me look really quick. It was, yeah, so he's had a little, it was March 2019. So he's had a steady break. He did hurt Bivol in that fight, but he pretty much got beat when it came to that. He lost to Sullivan Barrera after that Joe Smith, you know, did what he did to Bernard Hopkins in 2016. That next summer, 2017, he lost to Barrera, and then he was out for almost a year, and then he was out for about 9 months or something before he kind of got back against Melvin Russell, it looks like here. So to me, I really like this fight. I do favor Jesse Hart. Obviously, you know, I liked him, you know, in the summer against Sullivan Barrera? His two fights with Gilberto Ramirez were pretty damn good. The last one was really close. Both of them were really close, I think. Really good, you know, good fight and whatnot. Good fighter in general. Both these guys are just solid. You know, I kind of feel like just the more active guy in Joe Smith Jr., or Jesse Hart, sorry. Joe's going to bring it. I just think the style of him coming forward, he's got some power, you know, power punching, and from what I understand, he got like a full camp on this one too. So that helps, obviously. You know, I like I said, I like the fight on paper. It's a good mid-level fight. Some people are kind of like, man, we got a schedule. It's active in January and February, but it's only a handful of fights that I even like, and none of them are big besides, you know, Wilder and Fury. But there's a couple undercard fights that I really like. I do like that Ramirez Postal. We'll talk about the schedule a little bit later, but, you know, you're not going to put all your best inventory, you know, 5 weeks out before what could be the biggest fight of the year, potentially. You know, it really matters what happens later in the year, but Wilder Fury is a big one, and not just that, but the attention will be on it as well. So, yeah, I do like Joe Smith, or God, I keep saying that. I think I just like Joe Smith Jr. No, pause. Jesse Hart, though. I got Jesse Hart by decision. I think he's going to do enough on the outside with power, because both of them have power, but I think both of them will get hurt in this fight, no doubt about it. So I'm looking forward to this fight, though. This one's on Saturday. We have one on Friday and a couple on Saturday. Steve Nelson and what is it, Kim Killick, and a couple other, you know, fights on the undercard when it comes to that. We also have Jaime Munguia versus Spike O'Sullivan. You know, it is what it is. That's the first, what is it, the first or second? Is this the first middleweight fight? Spike's a come for a guy who's pretty plain and simple. If Munguia even, you know, throws more jabs or somewhat doesn't try to go for a home run punch right away, I think he should be able to win. I'm not sure he stops him, though. We're going to find out if middleweight feels better for a young fighter, you know, because he was having some problems supposedly making 154. Maybe he was starting to get a little worn out, you know, making that weight, and he's going to come up healthier. I think this is a good test for him to see. Maybe some of that Hogan performance wasn't just style. Maybe it was that he was a little, you know, tired, faded a little bit after trying to make the weight. Who knows? Who really knows? I mean, it's not like the guy, yeah, he has a lot of, you know, knockouts on his resume. But it's not like he was like a huge, huge 154 pounder. I'm not saying he was small, but I don't know. We'll find out. I do think Munguia will win that fight, though. I think he'll win it just outworking him. Could TKO him, too. I'm not quite sure about that. Dezern and Jimenez fight. It's a women's fight for the WBC and WBO super middleweight fight. That could be interesting. Also, Hector Tenjanara, I think it is. Tenarja. I can't remember how you say his name, but he's fighting. Who is it? Burgos, I think. Here, let me check real quick. I got the schedule here close. Yeah, Juan Carlos Burgos as well. Actually, Jose Burgos and Joshua Franco fight, too. I see that fight listed right below it. So I'm going with Munguia by clear decision, by just outworking him. I could see it being an entertaining fight, though. If he stops him, I think it'll be more TKO. Who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe, like I said, this weight will fit him better, and maybe he goes out and puts on a good performance. We'll see. No matter what, it should be action-packed, though. It definitely should be action-packed. And then we have the Showtime card. I think it's a Showtime special edition. I don't think they actually make this a championship boxing. Probably on just level of pay. Obviously, this is championship fights. Clarissa Shields and Ivana Habazin. Fight for some vacant titles at junior middleweight. Shields is going down in weight again. You can really tell just looking at her that she's lost a fair amount of weight, you know, going down. You don't see this. You know, I'm glad she's doing it early in her career to kind of get this out of the way. I've seen Habazin fight a little bit. I'm not going to sit here and break this down like it's like I've seen her enough, though, to be honest with you. I think could be potentially a solid fight for her. It's really, you know, it seems like a lot of the hype is going to be about what happened at the weigh-in. You know what I mean? We're going to find out. I don't know. I think Shields is going to win fairly handedly, but Shields has a way of keeping opponents around rather than stopping them. So maybe at this weight, she'll show some of that power and some of that heavy hitting that you saw more. It seemed like in the amateurs, anyway. Also, Jaron Ennis returns, who he looks to have a 2020 year that's pretty damn solid. He's taking on Eubov? I can't remember how to say his name now. Espinoza. And, God, who is she fighting? It's a unification. I know that. It's super middleweight, actually, because I remember that from the other fight, right? It's, God, who is she fighting? I'll just check the schedule. Man, I can't remember shit today. So Alicia Napoleon Espinosa is taking on Ellen Cordero. I don't know how to say that. Cordero's? So look for, you know, some of that. You know, just showbox. Usually they do pretty good on the undercards. So we're going to have two women's, you know, fights on here. So that's kind of a good look, obviously, for women's fighting and boxing in general, you know, whatever, combat sports for women. It's nice they're getting praised. Like I said, I realize that some of the divisions are deeper than others, and the sport itself has some depth thing going on. You know, we're going to see more women in. We're seeing it more in combat sports. You know, years ago, UFC, you know, and MMA looked like, you know, well, they need some more depth. Now they've gained a little bit more depth, which has helped out, right? So, obviously, we'll see. We'll see. Maybe Clarissa Shields will be in a tough fight. I don't know. I think she'll win by decision, if not by knockout. But it's really hard to, you know, say Clarissa Shields by knockout just straight up because, you know, she just hasn't been knocking, you know, her opponents out. So that's January 10th tomorrow, actually. And then those other two cards, the ESPN one led by Hart and Smith Jr., is ESPN on Saturday, and then same with the DAZN, headlined by Munguia and Spike Sullivan. So that about wraps up the preview section. Like I said, I understand some people are like, hey, you know, I want more bang for my buck. We got all these fight cards, but some of the main events don't stand out to be like, wow, I'm a big fight or whatever. But you got to remember, it's January and February. We have a lot of boxing on. Sure, the Joe Smith Jr. and Jesse Hart, it's a mid-level fight, it's a crossroads fight, but those are good fights, dude. A lot of times those are good fights. If you look at some of the other card fights that we're going to get in January and February, you know, Ramos against Pirelli, that's a good fight. That's a cross, you know, roads, mid-level, you know, who's going to keep themselves in contender range, you know what I mean? The JoJo Diaz and Farmer fight. That's a really good fight. Maybe people don't know Daniel Roman's opponent. That's going to be a good fight too on that card. So there are some good fights. You just got to know which ones to look for. You know what I'm saying? You just got to know which ones to look for. But anyway, sorry about that. Got something stuck in my throat here. Let me get a little water. So, you know, you got three cards. Timing-wise, I actually haven't seen exactly when that Jesse Hart, Joe Smith Jr. fight is on. I've been busy this week, so I haven't even recorded it yet. So, hopefully they get a lead-in. I'm not sure about that, though. I'm not totally, you know, positive with that. Hopefully it's just not at the same time. You know, we know we're going to get a lot of competition head-to-head, but the same time stuff is what kills you. You know what I mean? That's what gets you where you're just like, come on, dude. Like I said, we will be talking a variety of stuff here. Some of it's just quick news. Some of it's a little bit more in-depth. We will cover that Crawford Spence Twitter beef that heated up, but then kind of strangely got solved on, I guess, on the phone. You know, I don't know. It's kind of interesting how this played out here in the last couple of, all in one day. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Like I said, we'll talk a little Gervonta Davis and Shakur Stevenson and Koznoski and Joshua Taylor, too. That one has got me wondering, you know, what's going on. But as far as Gervonta Davis, real quick, you know, he's been making noise as far as a ticket seller this year. Now, he's going to have to get some better opponents for next year, no doubt about that. But, you know, him and Mahrez, before that fight got canceled, they sold a fair amount of tickets, right, at the StubHub, and a fair amount stayed, you know, like they kept their tickets, they went to the show. Sometimes, you know, folks that wanted to see Mahrez don't always keep their tickets, they return them, or they, was that a return fight? Now that I think about it, maybe it wasn't, like where you could actually return your, I don't remember. It was almost a year ago. I guess that's why I don't remember. But anyway, you know, he had a mandatory, then he had Gamboa. And, you know, too bad that mandatory wasn't Edner Cherry, because I do believe he would have beaten Nunez, but Edner Cherry wasn't able to compete against him, unfortunately. So bottom line is he needs better opponents. Supposedly Santa Cruz is next. That qualifies as a great opponent, especially if it's at 130. But we'll see. Anyway, he did big numbers in Baltimore. As we know, that's his hometown. It was great to see that. And now we're getting, you know, we knew he put butts in the seats in Atlanta. He opened that market up back, you know, it hadn't had a championship fight in over 20 years. That gate did $2.2 million, which is a really big gate, especially against the guy that was faded and nobody really, you know, on the hardcore level or media were itching to see that fight for obvious reasons. So $2.2 million, I mean, that's what Spence and Porter just did. That's huge. And I know a lot of people that are Lomachenko fanboys want to act like he's not making noise, but I want to know the last time, you know, that Lomachenko did just that. You know, has he sold a $1 million gate? No, let alone a $2 million gate. I did get a little flack with many others that said, hey, when they're just talking about it from a ticket perspective, that it's a good thing and we need people that can sell and this is a good thing. But also realizing what kind of year he had. You know, I wasn't out there praising like he should be fighter of the year. He had all these great fights or anything like that. Shit, I'm glad he just won some rounds in his last fight. You know, compared to his fights before that. That was a major improvement. But anyway, that's a good look. No matter what you think of Gervonta or you think Loma and Haney and Lopez will wipe the floor with them, like a lot of people are saying now after that Gamboa fight, whatever the case may be, dude is moving tickets. And we'll see. They're talking about pay-per-view this year. You know, that's going to take a legitimate opponent, which would probably be Leo Santa Cruz, right? So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Also, Shakur Stevenson, there was a lot of talk that he's going to take on Josh Warrington next, maybe in May. That could be at a stadium. It could be at, you know, an arena as well. Maybe a stadium. That would be dope, right? But we'll see. It's not going to happen next, though, which I wasn't that all surprised. You know, I mean, he just got a belt, even though it was like a whatever belt, vacant belt or whatever, but still. Usually when a guy just gets a belt, they either have a mandatory that they have to oblige by or they just get a defense, right? And so it sounds like he's going to take on Mariaga, who's a solid fighter, very solid fighter. I don't have a problem with this fight whatsoever. I think it works for what it is. I'm not going to sit here and tout it, but where he's at in his career, I like the fight. I mean, this guy has given some good fights to Oscar Valdez and others. So I like the fight. I wasn't really sold that they were going to go to that unification right away. It does sound like there might be some plans for the summer, though. I could see, like, maybe in August, maybe an outdoor fight in the UK. Or maybe they'll meet in Madison Square Garden, meet halfway. I don't know. It does seem like Frampton was talking about, you know, or not Frampton, but Warrington was talking about, you know, that's going to happen. Frank Warren was talking about that's going to be a stadium fight. We'll see. You know what I mean? We will see. We don't know. we're going to find out. But I like that opponent, though, in the meantime. It's still you got to remember every, you know, Stevenson is at a certain point in his career, so you can't just go and fight, you know, go, all right, move up and wait and fight somebody like Burchelt now or whatever. You know, it is what it is. I'm not saying he can't do that, but, you know, you get moved a certain way, and I don't mind this at all. I like this fight, Mariaga. It's going to be at the Hulu Theater in New York. in MSG, so that's cool. That's close enough to where he's from as well. It's going to be March, I want to say 17th, I believe it was. I think it's on ESPN. I hope it's on ESPN. It's not on, you know, ESPN Plus, but we'll see. Like I said, I do like the fight, though. I think it's a legitimate fight. It's a good step in his career. And it's a worthy guy, like I said, where he's at. Another fight that's going to be made March 7th, actually the week before that, on Fox. It sounds like Koznowski versus Helaeus. Okay, so we've been hearing three opponents, basically. We've been hearing three opponents. That's basically what we've been getting. We've heard Helaeus, we've heard Hammer, and we've heard Brazil. And most people favored Brazil, you know, in this fight. It makes a lot of sense TV-wise. If you look at Brazil on Fox and on NBC even, he's been featured a fair amount of times. So a lot of people were looking at that one like, hey, that's a good fight. We know it's going to be all action. It does sound like, and that was the number one option. Whereas, you know, it seemed like Helaeus and then even Hammer were the other options, kind of second and third from the sounds of it. But I guess, you know, Brazil's been talking a good game, saying he wants it. And that was my thing. Was he the fact that I saw him saying, hey, I'm ready. I've been doing some work at the gym. He kind of seemed like he was ready to just go right back into it. I didn't know if he wanted a tune-up, being the fact that, you know, his last fight he got starched. I didn't really know, but I was okay with the Brazil fight because it was like, well, he wants to fight. So let's get it. That's a good brawl, you know what I mean? I guess the money wasn't right for him. We don't know what the money was as of right now. I guess it just didn't fit his structure. I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not saying, oh, he's ducking him, nothing like that, but they couldn't come to terms, even though that was what it sounded like was going to be the fight. So in comes Helaeus. Now, Helaeus is one of those fighters. I mean, he's going to be game. You know, he was just winning a fight. Actually, it was at the Armory here in Minneapolis on FS1, I believe. Maybe that was the Fox card, actually. I can't remember which one that was. But he was beating Gerald Washington. I think he was up on two of the three scorecards, if I recollect. He was beating him, and then Washington dusted him. That was a really good fight. But, you know, so I guess you could make the argument, well, Brazil was coming out getting starched, you know, coming off of starching of Wilder, and you know, Helaeus at least got some sort of camp in a fight since he got beat. So, sure, both of them were coming off relatively, you know, outcomes that they got knocked out in. But as we know, getting knocked out by Gerald Washington and getting knocked out by Wilder are two different things. I think a lot of people could think, well, it was Wilder, dude, you know. Plus, I mean, Brazil did actually hit him with some really good shots right before he got knocked out, like seconds before. But, you know, Helaeus is one of those guys that, like I said, is game. He's got a good jab. He can stick that out there. And he's a little bit more awkward than a Brazil, whereas Brazil, and we know Brazil – and Koznowski was a war. So that's what I'm hoping for, is a war. But, you know, the optics are just better with Brazil. Like I said, sure, both of them were coming off recent knockouts, but the optics with Brazil being an opponent that has been on Fox a couple times, been on some undercards, on Wilder's cards, right? He's been on NBC. He's been in the spot. People know him more, and he's been in a lot of brawls, you know? So, yeah, I favor Brazil over Helaeus. And the fact that Gerald Washington knocked him out, and not long ago, last year, Gerald Washington got knocked out by Koznowski, fairly early, and that was actually kind of a surprise. Washington did okay, and he got knocked out. So, you know, Gerald Washington was down on the cards and then knocked out Hellenius. So now I guess Hellenius is going to have to do that. I don't know. I'm just hoping. I guess at the end of the day, I'm not a professional matchmaker, and some of these Fox cards have turned out way better than a lot of people, you know, think. We're not matchmakers. On the surface, it does seem like Brazil was the better opponent. No doubt about it. You know what I mean? But I'll say this. A guy that's well past his prime and seems shot warm for a while is Chris Arreola. And Arreola put on a hell of a fight. Now, Arreola did look good on the undercard of Spence Garcia, I think that's where it was, where you're like, okay, dude, he's actually in shape. And that's why I think they made that fight. Like, hey, Arreola's in shape. He's focused. Let's just put him in there. We know that's going to be a good fight. So that's what I'm hoping. I mean, Hellenius and Arreola, you could probably put them in the past their prime shop-worn dudes, right? I think you can put them in there. Like I said, it's just the optics of last year, Washington knocking out, you know, Hellenius, and Washington got stopped earlier that year by Koznovsky. So it seems like a lateral move more than, okay, that's another step up. But it is what it is. I think it'll still be a good action fight. I'm really hoping it'll be a good action fight. So two other news and notes. We are going to have some callers today. Just, you know, momentarily we're going to have somebody pop in. And I think Carcino is going to pop in for the last part of the show as well. Now, as far as – what am I thinking here? Shoot, I forgot. Oh, yeah. Shoot. Where'd it go? Oh, yeah. So, real quick, Josh Taylor, who's coming off that big, big win, you know, over Regis Prograis. He, you know, it was rumored that he was going to come here and start fighting. He may fight somebody else. He might fight Ramirez at 140. He may move up and fight Terrence Crawford. So there's news that broke today. I think it was today. Maybe it was late last night. I totally don't know. I woke up and saw the news. Josh Taylor signs with Top Rank, which is interesting to say the least. It's not like some sort of surprise, you know what I mean? Because we had heard that he was going to fight someone in the Top Rank camp. But, you know, it sounds like Josh Taylor signed a multi-fight contract with Top Rank. It also involves, I believe it also involves MTK Global. So I want to thank Josh's advisors, FT Global. Is that new or was he with them already? I can't remember. I can't remember if he was already with MTK Global or not. But either way, that makes sense. You know what I mean? And it's a really good signing. But Cyclone Promotions, and Barry McGuigan is saying, nah, dude. I mean, he just lost Frampton not long ago. Supposedly, he got screwed, Frampton, in that one, though. I shouldn't say supposedly. That's what it sounds like. But Cyclone Promotions, you know, they obviously moved him to this point. They're saying, nah, you know. Oh, and they're saying, okay, so it was a new contract, an advisory contract. With the powerhouse MTK Global. This is from Elliot Foster on Boxing Scene. Barry McGuigan, though, you know, says, now hold on. And Shane McGuigan, you know, is the trainer, too. He's saying, you know, hold on, dude. You know, he said, we are sad that Josh has felt the need to attempt to break his contract in this manner and frustrated those who have caused him to do it. It kind of sounds like the David Benavidez fight or contract thing last year. Was somebody fooling around and misinforming somebody? You know what I mean? I don't know. You know, I don't know, dude. They're saying we got a contract. So I don't know what to tell you, but whereas the other side, you know, Arum, they're saying they're going to move forward, and he's going to fight in America, Josh Taylor. So, you know, that sounds like some sort of lawsuit that'll probably get settled. It could get drawn out, though. And usually when you do this, bring on a new fighter, especially in the States, you give him a fight, and then you kind of assess where he's at. And I know Jose Ramirez, as we know, has a fight coming up against Postal in February, but he also is due another mandatory for the summer. So maybe the idea is to get him here, get him a fight, maybe two fights, but at least a fight, and then match him later in the year, maybe late 2020 with Ramirez. Maybe it's going to be a get him a fight and then match him with Crawford. I don't know. Maybe it's matching him right with Crawford. That's usually not how that, you know, transitions goes, but sometimes it does. You know what I mean? I'm not sure. So we'll see. You know, when someone signed to something and then they sign something else, that generally slows down the process. As far as getting Ramirez fight, we know Ramirez is due. Like I said, yeah, he's got two fights that he has to make for Mandos because he's the unified champ now. So, not to say they couldn't step aside, you know, the next guy. Maybe I don't think it's an IBF belt, right? Because isn't that what Josh Taylor has? So we'll see. I have no clue, man. I don't know how this thing's gonna turn out, but we're gonna find out pretty damn shortly. I shouldn't say shortly, but we're going to find out in 2020, that's for sure. Now, as far as this Crawford Twitter beef with Spence, we know he got into it with what's his toes? Going at it for a little bit now. I'll say this. I got a variety of things to say on it. First and foremost, it is fun to see a more animated, more aggressive, like the pull-up, you know, when he pulled up on, you know, quote-unquote, pulled up on Spence, and they did that. It wasn't this fall. It was two falls ago, right, I think? And they had the face-to-face. They laughed. They cried. It was better than cats, whatever. Right, Bob Arum was there, and that stuff builds fights on a certain level, right? And, you know, Crawford isn't a guy that calls out names over and over again. You know, as far as Twitter, that's awesome. I think that's part of building this fight. You know, when you have over a million people, you know, watching your fight, it would be cool if he'd talk about taking off your panties to Spence and get the fight. You know, sign the contract. In the interview after the fight, I would appreciate that more, not just at TMZ and not just on Twitter, but I'd appreciate it in the post-fight too, because those don't make the fight, all three of that. Talking to TMZ, beefing on Twitter, and saying it after a fight on an ESPN broadcast. No, that doesn't make the fight, but it fuels fire. It fuels fire. You can't say it doesn't. So, I think all three of those would have been nice. But I'll say this. I do love this side of Crawford. And there's moments where in interviews, people can, you know, interviewers can bring it out of him, just not many. Because he shuts down. He doesn't really – there's certain things he said, you know, in the Ward interview, in the Joe Rogan interview. So it is what it is. You know, it is what it is. Sometimes he answers stuff that he doesn't, or, you know, answers vaguely or straight up no. Like when Mannix asked him about Porter recently, he acted like, why would we even be talking about that fight? So, you know, it is what it is. But I do love this aggressive Crawford. You know what I mean? Him tweeting Spence saying, I'm ready when you're ready. Matter of fact, I've been ready before I even got to 147, like I've been said, like I've been said, you got these people fooled, but not me. Whenever you get back right, I'll smoke you. All you got to do is sign the contract next, and I'm in your head. Then he says, keep defending him, meaning Spence. I'm telling y'all now, and I mean what I say when the day comes, when I knock him, meaning knock him out, or knock him off, whatever. All I want y'all to do is keep that same energy because you've been, crying. Because he going to cry in the car. He wasn't built for this shit. I got over here, just watch me show the world. So obviously, he's riling shit up. And, Spence did come back at him saying, well, this sounds good. Only time I hear from your shit is in social media. Don't act like a boss now. Like you don't handle your shit. We've been told your handler, Bob, what it takes to make it happen. I don't choke off smoke, dude. That's what he's saying, fight not going to get made on here, yada, yada, yada. You know what I mean? So they had their Twitter beef. So I do love this Crawford shit, though. I mean, the whole sign the contract thing. And so there's a contract drawn up for it then? Because we know Bob Arum said that they have shaped a deal that they don't have signed or finalized, but they had a conversation, and they're basically hovering around some sort of negotiation number that gets near what Wilder and Fury. So it's near 50-50. Does that mean 55-45? Does that mean 60-40? Does that mean 65-35? I have no clue what that means, exact number. But Bob Arum did say that they've at least shaped the deal to where they've talked it through enough that they – once the fight needs to get made, he feels comfortable that they can come to some sort of an agreement. Now, this is what Bob says. Sometimes what Bob says is just talking. I believe him that they've at least talked about it a little bit because they have had the day-to-day contact now. And they are working on other fights. Like, they wanted to make some fights for the undercard, PBC against Top Rank. Some of those fights were quality. And it sounds like they're either going to end up on a PBC platform or an ESPN platform, which in the end is damn good, right? So I don't know. The way Spence says, hey, we did say what it takes, so does that mean, well, we did say we'll do the fight for 60-40? I don't know. I don't take a bunch of sides on this stuff. I just talk about it. Twitter beef is fun. I don't get too much into it. I get into it, but I don't sit there and take sides off of Twitter beef. You know what I mean? It is what it is. Now, the funny thing is, at the end of all this, Crawford was like, I'm going to call you. Now, make sure you pick up the phone. From the sounds of it, Spence did pick up the phone, and they had a talk. And this is why Twitter beef, I don't get too riled up from it, because this is – so at the end of all this, and this is 12:50 my time, Central Time, on January 6th. So they were beefing, and then he said he's going to call, and here's what it said. This is Terrence Crawford's last tweet on this subject, for the most part anyway. Errol Spence is a cool dude on some real shit. We both agree the fight will happen. So imagine, and the Twitter beef riles up the Spence fanboys and the Crawford fanboys and the anti-PBC and the pro-PBC. That's who this is for. And, there is some lingering casual interest as the fight approaches and you start Googling, you start doing your Googles, you start to see some of this stuff online. So it will rally up a casual once they find out about it, if they haven't already. But imagine, though, in that moment, a Crawford fanboy who think everybody on the planet is ducking and that's it, right? Imagine them reading that last shit, though. They'd be like, oh, that, That's not him. That's not Terrence. That's not Terrence. That's somebody tweeting for him, you know? And it goes back and forth like that, you know? And that's what Twitter beef's all about, you know? You know, in the end, I think I tweeted out this message. Listen, I can understand why Crawford wants the Spence fight. I get it. Why? That's your biggest payday. It's your most meaningful fight, probably of his career, right? I get it. So why you're gunning for that before you're gunning for a Porter fight for less money and less accolades, right? That's I can understand why he's not really focusing on this Porter fight. I get it. I totally understand it. I can also understand why Spence has been focused on Pacquiao, his biggest payday, his most important opponent profile-wise, that's for sure. Like I said, more money, more prestige. Yeah, I get it why he'd want to fight Crawford after that. Now, when we say prestige, I'm talking about profile building. We know that, well, first of all, it wouldn't be a unification or it wouldn't be undisputed because Pacquiao's still there if they fought. If Crawford and Spence, I know that's everybody's one and two, but, you know, I hate to get technical, but we wouldn't have a belt in there too. So I don't really care about, oh, this belt, that belt. To me, that would be one and two, Crawford and Spence. I'm not going to act like it would, but I can understand both sides of it, and I just want these fights to happen within a year. You know what I mean? That's at the end of the day, that's really what all this stuff is about. I'm going to go ahead and go to the callers here. We have about 40 minutes left of the live stream, and when I say 40 minutes left of the live stream, that's about what we have left of the show. We're going to go a little bit over, but I got to work at the bar tonight, so this is a little bit quicker show than normal. Like I said, we didn't have a big prediction segment. I'm going to go ahead and bring in, I believe I know who this is. They haven't pressed one, so I'm just going to go ahead and 813. I'm going to go ahead and bring you in. You haven't pressed one, though, so I don't want you to hang up. If you're just listening, okay, there we go. I believe I know who this is. I just want to make sure. 813, you're live on Ropadope Radio. What is going on?
Chris, what's going on, buddy? Pleasure to talk to you, man. Marquise, big fight weekend.
Man, Marquise, what's going on, man? How the hell are you, buddy?
Pretty good, man. Actually, glad boxing is back in full swing again, man. After last week, looking around crazy and reading everybody's, you know, best of the rhetoric and lack thereof of boxing news, and pretty much it's funny how because I heard online before you cued me in the Crawford Spence Twitter beef. Imagine being a fanboy of one of those two sides, being like, oh, he's going to get him, and no, he's going to get him. All of a sudden, they're like, no, we're good, guys. We're going to fight at some point. For absolutely wasting everybody's time.
Like, wow,
it's unbelievable.
Hey, I thought you, no, man. You know, like I'm out here vouching for you. What happened, Spence and Crawford? That shit's funny. That's what makes me laugh about it.
Oh man, it makes the internet such a fun place with stuff like that. But no, with these fights this week, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at any of these fight cards or whatnot. But the one thing that just came down the wire about an hour and a half ago is Carissa Shields, Ivana Habsyn fight. More importantly, they both made weight. There's always been a running gag with Shields not making weight for one reason or another. I don't know why. It just is. But she Habsyn came on the scale, made weight, offered Carissa Shields ice cream afterwards. It reminded me of something out of Mortal Kombat, the old friendship move. It was one of the funniest things I've seen in a while. So my intrigue in that fight, because it's women's boxing.
That's funny.
Yeah, oh, it's one of the fun. It's especially like the old friendship moves where, you know, you see like Johnny Cage, you know, do the break dance or they play video games. It's my new favorite thing right now at these weigh-ins now at this point. But no, that fight is going to be more intriguing than what it should be. Considering the fight, honestly, if I didn't mention it to you, did you know what's happening tomorrow?
Yeah, no, not much at all. There hasn't been a whole lot of talk about it. Kind of surprising based off that weigh-in. That's really the only thing that people want to talk about is the weigh-in, really.
Yeah, but at this point, this go around, they had the way, and you know, they had it away from the public. It was roped off. It was held down like Fort Knox. Nothing was going to happen at this weigh-in besides people missing weight. So that was a done deal of that. So that's why you're not hearing too much about that at all. But the fact that these fights this weekend, actually, I didn't get your thoughts on it, but who are you looking for boxing-wise as your guy to look for this year in boxing? Mine, actually, this year, and a lot of folks are – and it's funny because I was reading people's prospect lists and all over fun stuff. I'm looking at Gabriel Flores, and it's funny because I think ESPN and Dan Rafael had a list that he put out, you know, last year around Christmas time. Didn't put the ESPN guy on the list, which kind of surprised me a little bit. So that's the guy I was looking forward to this year. I want to get your thoughts on that, actually.
Yeah, I heard he's actually going to fight on the undercard, too, of on the simulcast on ESPN and Fox for that Wilder Fury. I believe I read that yesterday or something like that. Am I right on that? Flores?
Yeah,
Jr.,
you are.
Right?
Yeah, Gabriel Flores Jr. is the guy. Yeah, he's fighting on the Fury Wilder undercard. He's facing Matt Conway. I haven't looked at too much about that one, but That's who he's fighting in the undercard. So pretty much top rank for their undercard fights is already listed. There are two fights already. It's Gabriel Flores versus Matt Conway. Andy Miriamon is facing Javier Molina. So that's the top rank portion of the undercard. I'm guessing we'll wait for Wilder to make his statement, and then we'll figure out down the line what they'll have on their end for the undercard as well. Because I think they're giving everybody, I want to say, it's two fights on the undercard apiece and then one fight on the main card apiece. So it's going to be a long card. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, there's like six bouts on that. Now, I'm sure a couple of them will just be prospect knockouts at the start, of course. But, like, there's a three-hour card of ESPN and Fox simulcasting before. So it'll probably be like my time, Central Time, 5 to 8, because usually those pay-per-view cards start at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock Eastern. So that's a lot of fights. It's kind of cool as long as they, you know, throw in some interesting fights too. I'm not saying they're going to be, you know, 50-50, you know, barn burners, but it'd be nice for them to not just have just showcase fights. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what the interesting part about this, and I'm kind of glad that they actually merged on part of this, because I was expecting usually when Top Rank has these fight cards like this that last like this long, for the most part, the ESPN Plus portion of it, you've seen these cards. A lot of it is prospect fights. It is what it is. Like the good example is the Fury Suarez card was literally nothing but prospects until the main event,
right.
And I was like, all right. So PBC does the same thing too. Just that PBC just for some reason doesn't air it. They just have like 15 fights on the card, and you only see like six. But that's neither here nor there. But it's interesting also with this fight card as well, the way it's shaping up, is that I really wonder, because at the end of the day, because it's the way social media has taught me over the last 12 to 18 months, Chris, especially with like the allegiances of it, it's not just fighters anymore. It's also just groups and promotion companies for some strange reason. So it reminds me of like of old like late 90s wrestling, like WCW versus WWF stuff. It's kind of the same. It's the same bizarre fandom, actually. It's really neat. It's really neat how history repeats itself. So I'm really intrigued on depending on how these fights go. You know, if the better fights are shown on, you know, the top rank side of things, will we have all of that coming back out, or will we have like or vice versa with PBC? So I'm looking forward to that. Besides the fact that whoever's going to win Wilder Fury, I really do believe, Chris, and everything I've read and been told otherwise on my end here, is there's going to be a third fight between this in the event that if Wilder loses this fight, Wilder has the option for the rematch clause. I think it's at a 60-40 split. I know Bob Arum has confirmed this as well on some, I think I want to say Boxing Scene or to Coppinger himself, but essentially that's the stipulation essentially, and it'll be a Fox pay-per-view as opposed to an ESPN pay-per-view. I think you may have read that as well at this point, but all of that is true.
I did read is that it was going to be a Fox trilogy. I don't know about that part, but I do know that the winner gets the 60 out of the 40, but both sides,
yes,
not just Wilder, but both sides, basically whoever loses the fight chooses the rematch clause, is the way it's been explained that I've recently heard. That's a new thing to it, that the loser says, and I think Tyson Fury said this too, that the loser gets to say, I want a rematch, which kind of makes sense because, you know, if you won, you're like, hey, I'm good, whatever, you know what I mean? So I don't think it's a two-way, if you win, you get the 60-40, But, you know, let's say one of these guys loses. Well, if Wilder gets out of box, he may not want to go right back to it. And if Fury gets starched, he may not want to go right back to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's what's taking so long on this rematch to begin with, because essentially I don't think honestly at one point last year Fury wants this rematch. I think now he realizes he needs it, because you can only run through there's not so much clamor for that Joaquin Fury part two at this point. So you have to fight the people that we all know. So I'm looking forward to that part of it. Also, with this fight, actually, I'm really hoping this springboards the actual boxing season. I know we have some decent fights this weekend. I'm a big fan of this Top Rank card up and down, actually, with Jesse Hart and Joe Smith Jr. But pretty much, I didn't realize that we have like nothing but like just 9 straight weeks of boxing. Actually, I did not realize. I looked at the calendar like 2 days ago, and it was like, wow, like this is back to the old times.
Yeah, and I do hear people saying, oh, there's not like another marquee matchup until, you know, the Wilder Fury. But that you're not going to put your biggest fight right before Wilder Fury. You know what I mean? But, I mean, you look at like Victor Postol against Ramirez. That's a good fight. I look
that's
at
not
some
bad.
Of these undercard fights, like Pirelli and Ramos and, of course, Diaz and Farmer. A lot of people don't realize Daniel Roman's in a really good fight. I like a lot of these co-features and undercard fights, maybe more than I like the main event. I think that's safe to say, but it is steady. It's full of chock full of them, and that one does stand out to me. I mean, Munguia and O'Sullivan might be a brawl, but I like Jesse Hart and Joe Smith Jr. I'm picking Hart by late TKO or just a UD or MD, really. I think it'll be a really good fight. I just think Hart, it just seems like he's been more the active fighter. I like his jab and his power punching, too. It seems like Joe Smith will fall kind of into a trap following too much. But I'm really looking forward to Hart Smith Jr. It's like that mid-level crossroads fight that, you know, especially with Top Rank is good at making TV fights. When they actually apply themselves, sometimes last year they didn't do that as much on ESPN, but I'm glad this fight, I like this fight a lot, actually.
Oh, no, it's a solid fight, and it's funny you mentioned that with Smith. I think Hart's going to win this, either by, I think he's going to win by points, actually. What I think will happen with this fight is pretty much the same thing that you mentioned. I think Smith just hasn't been active enough, and he wasn't active enough in that Bivol fight either, that pretty much he was all but outboxed to about the last two rounds, where he let Bivol let him get inside, and then chaos happened. But for the most part, he was pretty much outboxed, and I think Hart has the ability to do the same, just not as quick or as dull as a Dmitry Bivol fight. And it's funny, also, backtracking here, you mentioned that Tevin Farmer, Joel Diaz. That you know what's funny? That Miami card down here on Super Bowl week is actually a stacked card. The problem with it is that it's being overshadowed because they have the freaking YouTuber kids fighting in the co-main event, which is really derailing all momentum for any hardcore boxing fan for it. But, no, it's actually a pretty good card. It has 3 championship fights. I mean, granted, it's a Bubba Andrade championship fight. I mean, you can do what you will of those. But, yeah, Roman's on that card and Farmer's on that card. It's really solid, where it's like, it's going to be interesting to see with that as well. Also, with Munguia and Sullivan, I really think Sullivan's going to make this a better showing than what it is. I know everyone points to when he got dropped by Lemieux on the Canelo Triple G card pay-per-view back, Triple G Canelo 2 card. But I really think we're going to see a different version of Sullivan on this. I mean, this is Jaime Munguia, who arguably lost to Dennis Hogan. So it's not exactly like he's going to do the exact same thing. So it's going to be interesting on that one, too.
Yeah, I agree. I think Munguia is that type of fighter that he's just going to be in a lot of competitive fights because he doesn't separate himself. I am kind of interested to see. It's not like he was a huge 154-pounder, but he was young, and, you know, we did hear that he had trouble making weight. Now, I really don't know if that's a fact, because, you know, he was talking about for one type of fighter, he wanted to do a catch weight. The other one, the guy, you know, here, then he'll do a 154. So it's like, well, are you having problems making the weight or not? You know what I mean? The Jesse Vargas fight, actually, that's what that was about. So I don't know. I'm not really sure about if Munguia actually had problems making the weight. He is young. So if he was having problems and he was young, maybe 160 will be better for him. Plus, it just didn't seem like he was going to be the odd man out at 154, so I'm wondering if that was part of it. I kind of think style, though, had more to do with it than, oh, I was just weight drained. Because if you're so weight drained, you know, why were you trying to make fights at that, you know, at that weight class? It was, actually, I was wrong about Sullivan. It was, who was the other fighter he was going to fight instead of Jesse Vargas at 54? I just can't remember. Maybe he already tuned up against him. I can't remember. But I remember him saying, I want to do a catch weight with Jesse. And it's like, well, wait a second. What do you mean a catch weight with Jesse?
Yeah.
Like, Jesse isn't even a 54-pounder, really. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I think his style just lends itself to being in competitive fights. So you're right. It might just be a fun fight, something to talk about when it's done, you know?
Yeah, it's both of us. It's going to be really interesting. It's interesting because the card itself, up and down, is not the strongest. For me, it's a two-fight card. Well, it's two-and-a-half-fight card. Francine DeZoon was on there. She's all right. But Travelle Maison was one of the Golden Boy prospects that was on that card as well. But anything after that, it's just, you know, it's there. It's fine. But, no, with Munguia, I really wonder with him. I think he was going to be the odd man out at 54 because, for one reason or another, the belts are on the other side of the fence. And when that happens, you just don't get – they don't get the fights. I mean – the belt's running with J-Rock and Charlo, so you're not going to fight those guys anytime soon, especially for a belt that for the longest they don't recognize for one reason or another. I think they're slowly getting away from that. I think as this Crawford-Spence fight comes along, sooner than later, we'll hear them acknowledge WBO again, which is, you know, great to hear. I still would love, and I have not gotten an answer why they don't recognize it. They just, for some reason, didn't for like 4 months over the summer, and it confused everybody. Really, really confusing stuff on that.
To me, it just seems like they're obviously not making a stand because, you know, none of these promoters are going to make a stand for against all of the belts.
A sanctioned body,
you got to make all of them, right? But the WBO, I think they just thought, well, the with Bob only or the you know, Warren and Bob only, I think they just thought, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm good. We're just not even going to fuck around. We already got, you know, we already got the WBA. We already got WBC. We'll just do that, you know. So I think it was just – I don't think it had anything to do with Crawford per se. I just think they're just like, all right, we're going to eliminate that one and just work off this because we don't get title shots at that weight or at that belt anyway. So fuck it. We get title shots at this other one, WBA or whatever, the other one. So I think a lot of it had to do with that and – it is funny now that they did that, though, you see the WBO all of a sudden ranking more PBC fighters, which is kind of funny if you look at the last couple months.
Yeah, I realized that. It's like we had all of a sudden these guys are slowly moving up the food chain that had no business being there to begin with. Like in a lot of these weight classes where it's like, oh, you're going to work with this? Like, okay. No, it's fun with that. But no, back to your point, Munguia, I do think him going up was that because of it. Also, I just really – I think he's just a natural 160. We'll see what happens with that. I don't think – because I think he wants a belt, and since he gave up his WBO belt, that means at some point in the bizarre event that Andrade, who has a belt at 160, can't find anybody, and let's be honest, he's not fighting Charlo anytime soon. So in the event that doesn't happen, keep an eye out for Jaime Munguia because he'll probably be the next mandatory guy up because usually I think the WBO rule still is when you vacate, you can move up and become the automatic challenger. Like Let's be honest, I couldn't tell you who's the number one mandatory at 160 anyway. It's just WBO.
Right. But
they rotate
most
those things.
Most of those belts, you know, if you were the champ, you're going to be highly ranked when you move up to the next weight class. Maybe, like you said, maybe it's a Mando right away. Other times they'll make up one, whatever. They get you in position pretty quick. It'll be interesting, though, because it really seems like Golden Boy would rather match him against Canelo in a stay-busy fight at some point down the line rather than putting him in with Andre. You know what I mean? That seems like – I don't know if they'll do that either.
Yeah, now you mentioned it that way. But it's interesting because I just think no one wants to – I hate to use the word boogeyman at weight class because I think it's taboo, honestly, because no one's scared of anybody in this stuff. Either you have the money or you have to fight. You just never in between with that. But Andrade is slowly becoming, by default, the boogeyman at 160 for that WBO belt, mainly because no one wants to fight the guy. Mainly because of his style, it doesn't lend well, and I get that. But man, it's just funny the fact that they'll ever do that, have him be a stepping stone for Canelo, as opposed to actually fighting Amanda with Andrade, which is really interesting now that I think about that, because with Andrade, because Andrade's been trying to fight these big names at least for the last year and a half. He's been calling on anyone who would want a piece, which is funny because they're all under this, pretty much all of them at 160
well,
or 168 or all of them.
He signed with DAZN to get this big fight. That's what Eddie Hearn was saying. And now they're blaming it on Charlo. Well, Charlo needs to take the fight. Well, wasn't he supposed to go to DAZN to get that fight, though? Like, both Golovkin and Canelo clearly in the last year or so weren't looking to fight Andre or Charlo. I mean, Charlo even got in mandatory range and even got a fight called for him, which we knew. Golovkin's like, well, why wouldn't I just go fight Canelo? Why would I fight fucking Charlo just to, just to get some interim belt or whatever, you know? So, yeah, I mean, that is probably the fight that – my guess is, though, if he's going to go to DAZN for a fight deal or whatever, Charlo, it'd be against Canelo or something like that, you know what I mean? Not necessarily Andre.
Yeah, Andrade's not going to bring him over the fence for that. That's just one of those things where it's like, I don't know what's going on with that, because it seems like a lot of these guys now are having this issue of, like, people don't want to fight on DAZN, or as Leonard Ellerbe aptly called it, like, around the summertime, dead zone. And it's like, these guys are really, really dodging this network where it's like, some guys are flocking to it, some guys aren't. It's really intriguing how that plays out. Maybe we'll see what happens with time. Time will tell with that, because the one thing I always love is conspiracy theory, where it's like, oh, this station's going anywhere, or you know, my favorite rumor last year, was Showtime was getting rid of boxing, you know, that whole stuff, and it's like,
right.
Like five documentaries, and now they have like eight boxing cards in the next like 6 weeks. So it's like, yeah, they're not so much. So that's all going away until about April, when people forget.
They got like one of their best matchups they've had in a while with that Gary Russell card, now with the undercard with Rigo and Solis too. Like, they actually have some decent fights now. I mean, obviously that January 25th is just name saying busy, but interesting. I think the difference is Eddie Hearn the first offers, working for DAZN and brought it here, the first were like 3 and 4 fight offers. So there wasn't like, hey, we'll get you this guy first. It's like, hey, sign here. Now that he's changed his tune and he realizes, hey, I'm going to have to do what I did with Mikey in a sense, you know what I mean? Where it's the Mikey thing is a fight by fight basis, but it's a match thing.
Yeah, the one by one.
An option in there. But I think that'll help him a little bit more, but I just don't see Showtime and the PBC wanting to lose Gervonta off their network. Whereas at least I could see maybe Charlo at some point. Yeah, you got Eubank Jr. The Derevchenko fight means more now because of the Golovkin fight. It wasn't previously, obviously. But beyond those two opponents, Charlo, if it's not, Andre is a damn good opponent there. So maybe at the end of the year, after he fights some guys, maybe if it's a one-fight huge contract, maybe he would. But I still think that they're going to try to say, hey, I wish what Al would do is, to say, we're going to put Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather in May at the MGM. And the MGM will take that fight before Canelo fighting Callum Smith or something like that, right? And he says, this is what we're going to do. But then they said, the only way we move off that date is if Canelo and Charlo fight and we'll send them over to DAZN. That would be great. You know what I mean? Because then you're like, hey, you're using leverage, but you are sending Charlo over to DAZN. That would be like the ultimate, I shouldn't say the ultimate, because Andre and Charlo would be a very evenly matched fight, on paper. But as far as realistic happening, I think that would be the best alternative. Like, okay, this could actually happen, because damn well he'd go to fucking DAZN for Charlo, for Canelo,
Oh, yeah. No, you take the money and run with that. And it's funny because I'm convinced, too, at this point, and I hate to even mention it, but we are getting Mayweather-Pacquiao Part 2 for one reason or another. I'm still the 1% that has no interest back in this fight. I get it why they're doing it again. It's the same reason people want Canelo Triple G3. It's the same reason, but it's like, do we have to go through the muckety-muck of this again? Maybe because people forget that the first fight took 15 years to make, but... whatever it takes, I suppose. But no, if they can find some way to bait and switch like the network swap on that for Charlo, we're pretty much because I think what's happening with DAZN at this point, and I think we're all seeing it. They're not never mentioning the actual numbers and figures, but Eddie Hearn hinted that they're overpaying fighters to go over there. So essentially, what they're doing, when you're a bad football team, you get the big free agent, but you overpay to get that guy to come in here. So, I mean, like someone this offseason is going to take a lot of money to go to the Miami Dolphins. I don't care what their record says, money talks. So it's the same theory. So I'm looking forward to that to see who can they swing over to just, you know, if they just back the Brinks up. I'll just back up the Brinks truck. It's really that simple with it,
right,
too. Also, well, before
it
I let you go, man.
Which, you know, they may be that it may be because remember the top rank matchroom thing, they were supplying opponents for each other too. So maybe Eddie's going to have to say, hey, sorry, but I guess I am going to have to send Farmer over or something like that. But he's holding on to that. Well, I'll pay Farmer $5 million and he's only get $2 million there. And that's fair. You can't fault Farmer for that, you know? So, but I think he's going to have to send, like, how many DAZN guys have come over and fought on PBC? You know, that are not DAZN, but even Matchroom guys lately. I think that's going to be an issue, too. I don't know, man. I it's a mess, dude.
It's boxing politics, man. And at some point, they're going to have to break that wall down to solve the universal issue of, like, hey, who's fighting who? If you tear the wall down, everyone can fight everybody. And it's, as soon as they figure that out, they'll all be a better place. I do see where, because essentially what they're doing is they're stacking pieces up. It's this weird Jenga thing where it's like we'll take all of this in one division, and then this approach will take all this in one division. And it's like if you spread it evenly or just let everyone else just fight each other, it's okay. I mean, for some reason,
yeah,
exactly. It's just really
if they can make fights when they have a division both sides, that's fine. Okay, cool. Then it's just the one-off to crown a big fight in that division at some point down the line. Okay, that's cool. But they've made Daniel Jacobs and Canelo with the top guys. Now, Derevchenko, Golovkin, that was a mandatory. So that was for the belt thing. So that just got made. And let's be honest, people weren't checking for that fight until Derevchenko, you know, performed so well. That wasn't a fight that people were checking for. In fact, I saw plenty of people that were ripping Derevchenko for getting another title shot after losing to Jacobs, but it's like, well, dude, he beat Cloquet, and yeah, he's going to be within title range. I don't think it's really that big of a deal. Plus, it was a drop belt, which means, guess what? You know, they're gonna make a fight for it.
Yeah, it was a vacant belt. And also, funny thing about that card, too, people forget that was not the strongest fight card as well. Like, there's pictures, if you pull up that hashtag, by the way, on Twitter, the people sleeping in the stands. That's probably one of my favorite, one of the few fights I've seen that in, actually, at Madison Square Garden. So, I think the only highlight of that fight was that, I think Baranchuk was on it and a bunch of other, and it was really a put-together card. Much like that whole stretch of, like, bizarre cards, like, before DAZN had Joshua Ruiz, they had a lot of these put-together cards like that one and Usyk, Witherspoon. It was a lot of those. So I was like, yeah, all right. I mean, I get it, but it's like you just don't charge people money for it. But nonetheless, but at some point they'll figure that part out with making everyone come together on one piece. My whole thing in theory is that if this Wilder Fury pay-per-view makes the money that it does, and I think it will, not necessarily with pay-per-view buys. I don't know how many people are really going to pay for this. I mean, it's 2020, Chris. I mean, if you don't know a guy that knows a guy that can get you to fight, talk to somebody. But the interest of it is I'm intrigued on the promotional aspect of it because I've seen Fury all over the place. He's doing a gym meet and greet. He's doing all this stuff now. I know I think Wilder's probably going to wait until either the Super Bowl week to start his or just like the week after pretty much to start the whole promotional blitz. They're doing a press conference tour like the old Mayweather fight, so We're going to be inundated with this for the next month and a half once they get the ball rolling on that. I know they're going to do something for the Super Bowl with Fox because it's a Fox production. It's a Fox joint pay-per-view. They got to get their money back somehow with this. So I'm sure during the Super Bowl, the only thing in the U.S. that everyone watches here, we'll see these guys rumble through. We'll see these guys on First Take and the 6 o'clock Sports Center. We'll get all of that muckety muck between now and then. Fury call water a dolphin and everything else, you know, and you ducking me and concussion syndrome and all, you know, we we've heard this smack talk for the last 2 years already. We're going to hear it more in person. But I'm really thinking that's going to help, because the idea is, and it's the one thing I hated, Chris, hearing last year over and over again, which I still have not heard an answer for, where it's like they're trying to bring, you know, the old new eyes to the sport. You only bring new eyes to the sport either one or two ways, as you know, either with actual interest into it or money to promote it. And I think they're going to use the money to promote it on this go-round to make it happen. So I'm not a big fan of the whole press conference tour thing. I mean, you can only hear the same thing so much. Just ring the freaking bell. But we'll have it, and maybe they'll say something interesting out of it. I don't know. We've gotten – ever since he threatened to kill Brazil, we've gotten a kinder, softer, wilder, man. So I don't know how much we're going to get. But we'll see what happens when it plays out.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you calling in. I'm going to head to Carcino next, and then we're going to shut down this show. But why don't you let the people out there know where to find your social media and what you do out there, man?
Absolutely, man. You can find me on Twitter, causing havoc, annoying everybody on there, at Weak Sauce Radio, talking all things boxing and usually sports most of the time anyway. But if I'm watching it, I'm probably tweeting about it. At Weak Sauce Radio, all one word. You can catch my writings as well. I kind of write for the site a little bit. BigFightWeekend.com. I usually have updates on news and press releases and everything along those lines, keeping up with the world of boxing, the quotes and sound bites of fighters as well. You can find my works. You can find my works there. You can find me on Twitter there. Everything else is BigFightWeekend.com otherwise.
All right, man. I appreciate you calling in. You take it easy. Have a good weekend.
Absolutely, Chris. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, man. Take it easy. All right, we're going to go to Chicago and talk to Carcino, and then I'm going to go to work. I'm going to get something to eat and go to work, actually. Carcino, what's going on, man? How the heck are you, buddy?
Just crazy. You know, unfortunately, you know, we had a murder in the family. You know, my 26-year-old cousin was murdered. She was murdered in her driveway. Senseless murder. We don't know who did it. It was a drive. Somebody just was waiting on her at her house, shot her, and now, you know, been dealing with that after just losing the grandmother. Now we lost the cousin, so that's where I've been going through, like, since for the whole
man,
past
sorry
month.
Sorry to hear that.
Year.
Man.
Yeah,
really,
you know.
Sorry for your loss, man. That really sucks, man.
Yeah. So that's been my world for the past month. So, you know, my family's coming right back out this weekend, but I don't want to down everybody. We're here to have some good talks about boxing. That's the only thing that's been bringing me out of it is everybody else is focused on boxing and sports. I'm like, okay, let me just stay in my realm here. Let me stay in my world so I can get going. You know, and I'm, man, watching the press conference for the Clarissa Shields and Habib, and, man, I'm charged. I'm ready for this fight. And Showtime, man, way to go. Promoting, like, it's like two girl fights on this card. I'm like, wait a minute. They're headlining. They starting it right off. I was very proud of that. And to see this fight play out, Chris, I'm looking at this as, I don't know. Clarissa Shields is coming down in weight to make this fight. She's normally a bigger girl, so when she comes down in weight to try to make this fight happen with all the promotion and all the things she's doing, she's really selling the fight and pushing it. But when it comes down to the boxing, I don't know if Habazin can really hurt her. You know, that's the thing. To beat Clarissa, you're going to really have to hurt her. And I've only seen her really hurt once, and that was when she fought the girl from, I want to say she's from Argentina, the real cute girl. What's her name? Gabriel. When she dropped her in, like, the first round. And she really got her attention. Now, the last fight, the hammer landed some good jabs, even though it was the best technical fight I've seen Clarissa fight. Well, since she's got John David Jackson in her corner, it definitely has paid off a lot. Her balance and weight, and she shifted on her shots, they look a lot better. They don't look as sloppy as they used to be or a little amateurish. now they looked a little polished now that she's been working with John David Jackson. And she was able to land some real heavy shots on the hammer. But she felt the hammer's punches. Like, her jab was just, that was some real heavy punches she was taking in that fight. And I just think Hammer just fights in a parallel line. She doesn't have any side-to-side movements. And I think that domed her. And her boxing is kind of the same way. You know, her thing is to get space, boxing space, but she mostly in a straight line. You know, everything is, you know, back and forth and not side to side. So I don't know how she's going to, you know, fare once the fight gets a little physical, or if, you know, Clarissa gets on the inside and go to the body. But she's going to have to, you know, they said they worked on things, but we'll see. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued for this weekend. And it's been a lot of boxing talk in the news. I mean, this whole weekend has been a lot of boxing talk. I'm just like, man, every time I turn around, somebody's talking to somebody. And it's not, normally it's the promoters that normally get into it. I've seen writers get into it with other writers. I'm seeing all kind of things going down in boxing. It's been crazy. I'm like, man, this guy's in it with him. This guy, I'm about to fight every setback. I'm like, man, we are. It is really kicked off in 2020. So Ellie Setback, I was ready to rip his head off his shoulders once I saw his video he did talking about Gamboa. And it's obvious he wants to kiss up the Tank because he's not too light in the Mayweather gym. So in order to kiss up to Javante Davis, he just comes up with a one-sided fanboy video for, you know, Tank Davis, and just criticizes Gamboa when a man had a torn Achilles and went 12 rounds with a torn Achilles that he had, like, since the first round. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? He's acting like he says, oh, he had a foot injury, but whatever. He was getting beat up. And I'm like, it's the second round. He tore his Achilles. The man had one leg, and the other guy couldn't basically finish him. I'm like, he came back and actually won a round in this fight after he tore his Achilles. I'm like, you don't tear a guy down like that. So I went and I texted Ellie, and we had a little back and forth. Then he just immediately stopped contacting me because he knew he was wrong. So that was that. What Ellie said back, he really got on my nerves when he posted that. That was just ridiculous. And then...
yeah, that's just, you could see that from a mile away, you know?
Yeah, that's just disrespectful by all means. That's just, your whole journalistic integrity is down the drain at that point. I mean, especially when a fighter injures themselves and stay in the fight. Don't use it as an excuse to quit. The man tore his Achilles. I'm like, what do you want him to do? You know, he was like, man, my shoe and my heel, my back of my heel don't work. He can't move his foot. He had one leg. I'm like, and the man went 12 rounds. So, I mean, he could have easily just laid down and not get back up, and that would have been the end of it. And he still got paid the same amount of money. Give him his respect. But then this Terrence Crawford and this whole thing with Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence, man, it's been kicking off wonderfully. And I'm like, this is great. These two guys want to fight each other so much that it has trickled down to the fans. Everybody's all trying to paint a narrative and make excuses. And I'm like, well, if Errol's back healthy, then let's make the fight. Since he's saying, like, he's healthy, he's ready to go, there's no problems, fine, make the fight. Let's get it done. There shouldn't be any excuses. I shouldn't have to endure a Danny Garcia-Errol Spence fight. That makes no sense. What is Danny Garcia being rewarded for? Who's he beating to decide that Danny Garcia should be fighting for two world titles against Errol Spence? It makes no sense whatsoever. And I like Danny Garcia. I'm just saying, he hasn't beaten anybody, and if him beating Ivan is not going to tell me, okay, well, yeah, he's won three, he's 2-2 in his last fights. There's no way he should be fighting Errol Spence for the world titles. It just don't make any sense right now. He's done nothing to earn his spot. And Terrence Crawford is saying, look, man, your team is the ones that's not doing what they're supposed to do. So apparently, somewhere down the line, after all this talking back and forth, Terrence Crawford's manager said that Errol and them sent over a 50-50 contract. So I don't know how true that is. But Bomac said, like, they sent over a 50-50 contract for Terrence Crawford, and, like, they agreed that they're going to do the fight in 2020. So I don't know.
And Bob did say that they had had conversations, but it didn't sound like they had a contract drawn up, you know?
Right, exactly. So, you know, it seems like people are trying to negotiate it or just get the flames down, but from what I've been told, that they're going to have Pacquiao and Crawford sometime this year. I mean, Pacquiao and not Crawford, and Errol Spence fighting this year. So that's supposed to be like in the summertime, the springtime. So I don't know, whatever Randy's schedule is around him, you know, being in office. So many people think that this is the last fight of Manny Pacquiao's career. And I'm like, well, Manny can't afford to say that this is the last fight of his career. Even if he loses, he can't say this is it. You know, he's going to have to keep fighting because, you know, he's got a lifestyle that he lives up to. And he knows his name could still bring in millions of dollars.
Especially with Mayweather still lingering.
Yeah, and the thing is with that is they're still trying to do a Conor McGregor Mayweather 2 in the boxing ring. And I'm like, that is insanity. That is insanity. For anybody to think that they would be even, well, I can't say. The world is different. You know, you might still have some people out there that will believe Conor McGregor has figured out Floyd Mayweather now. Floyd is older. Conor is younger. And some people, you know, I'm going to watch it. If it happens, I'm definitely going to watch it. But I'm not, there's no intrigue in it no more. It's like once that's done, you can't go back to it, and there's no one else in MMA that would even garner any interest in a fight. So for me, it doesn't really mean anything. At this point, you know, it's pretty much a done deal.
I agree, because McGregor's been out of the ring too, you know what I mean? Where at least with Manny, you could say, well, he's been active, and Floyd hasn't. At least you could sell that a little bit more, but McGregor hasn't been fighting either, you know?
Exactly. They could definitely sell Manny and Floyd again if they decide to go ahead and do that. But who knows which direction, because Manny got all these presidential and, you know, he got promoted to a new vice governor and all these different things, and now his responsibilities, you know, are at a point where he can't really do what he used to do. He can only fight like 2 times a year. Or once a year when he gets out of the peak season. So you got to, like, schedule the fights. But normally those are not.
Yeah, they have, like, a recess. They have, like, a couple-month recess, just like they have here, because it is a Congress. And you can tell when Manny's actually trained during that break, he's a lot better than when he's full-time senator and full-time fighter in a camp, you know?
Exactly. So for Manny, you know, I'm looking at the scenarios of he can only do it in April and probably near the end of the year around that time. But those are not normally boxing peak times for their fights. But it's like if you make the fight, the people will watch it no matter what. So that's how they're treating it. And that is what it is. I saw in the news that about, you know, Deontay Wilder is going to have some more tricks up his sleeve when he fights Tyson Fury for the rematch. It's not going to be the same type of fight. He knows all of what Tyson wants to do now, and to me, it's still a difficult fight for Deontay Wilder. Just because you could know what somebody does, you could know how they set their punches up, you could know everything they does. You could have fought them before. But unless you know how to neutralize what they're doing in the ring, you can't stop it. You know, it's like Castillo. He fought Floyd Mayweather once. He thought, okay, I did great. The second fight, I know I could do even more. And it was even worse of a landslide. When Floyd fights you twice, the process just speeds up quicker because he saw everything that he needed to see the first time. And if you don't add another wrinkle, it's going to be worse. Like when he fought Madonna. I said, well, if he fight Madonna again, this is going to be a worse version. Madonna's not going to be the same. He's going to not have those. It's not going to be the same type of fight. And it wasn't. The drama of the fight wasn't there because Floyd wasn't going to let that happen anymore. He knew what Madonna likes to do, and he's going to neutralize it and get there a lot quicker. And same thing. You know, you can know what someone does. Tyson Fury throws a lot of feints. He throws a lot of head feints. Wilder hasn't seen guys like this. That was his first time seeing a guy do all those things. Fury, had he been more aggressive, he probably would have gotten a knockdown or a knockout. You know, the way he was pressing, he was throwing the jab, right hand, jab, right hand, jab, right hand, and Wilder had no defense against him. He couldn't stop it. He was getting hit with that punch considerably, all fight. Jab, right hand, jab, right hand, jab, right hand. And, I mean, Tyson Fury can go back and watch that fight and say, why wasn't I more aggressive? He's like, I was just trying not to get hit. Wilder telling
him that's the thing, That's the only drawback from being aggressive against Wilder is if you get caught. And another thing, I'll say this, though. You're exactly right, except for Mayweather wasn't on the mat in those fights, though. You know what I mean? So there is that, you know. I mean, he didn't land on the mat with his head straight up, you know.
Exactly. But see, Tyson Fury breaks down, and that gives the opportunity to Wilder. See, he knows to beat Wilder, if you're Tyson Fury, you got to knock him out. And the thing is your opportunity to knock him out was in the first six rounds. That was his actual best opportunity to knock out Wilder. Because he starts to break down. Tyson Fury does it because he's trying to avoid Wilder's shots. And he's getting under the punches. He's going up. He's moving. He's using his legs. He's using the ring to his advantage. He's throwing jabs, right? I mean, when he was throwing those punches, he knew Wilder was in no position to counter him with a counter punch. He wasn't countering with none of the punches because he doesn't throw a left. His left is just there. He doesn't throw a left hook. So it's like you don't have to worry about him trying to counter. If this guy's not going to counter you with his left, go after him. If Emmanuel Stewart was there, he would definitely be, go after this guy. He's not going to counterpunch you. He wants to counter with the right hand, which means he would have to swing it all the way around because Tyson Fury would step to the side. He would always step to his right and throw the jab right hand, which Wilder is not prepared for. That's why the one side of his face is all swollen because he was taking shots he wasn't even seeing coming. The jab would come, and here come the right hand. By the time he tries to swing his right around, it's too late. The jab and right hand has got you at bay. And you can't even counter him. And his size, the only thing, if you threw a right hand, you would hit him in the shoulder. And it was, I'm watching the fight again. I'm like, oh, my God, Tyson Fury has this fight won. Like, he could have really stopped him. And then he hurt Deontay Wilder in the last round. Wilder was reckless and coming in to land the right hand. He caught him with a short right hand. And that's what Tyson Fury, that's the best Tyson Fury is. He's a counterpuncher. So if you're aggressively coming after him, catching you with counter shots, that's what he does. That's his fighting style. He stops, he catches you with a counter shot, and comes in with his offense. So with Wilder, he knows he's got to, like, feint, get him off his square to try to get him to engage so he can get him off balance. He's got better boxing footwork. And he's just an all-around better boxer. I really see this being a difficult fight for Wilder.
I gotta shut down the show and head to work, but let's not go too deep into that because the fight's still coming. I do like where you're going, and it is going to be a difficult-ass fight. I just got to go to work, that's all.
Okay, but we'll leave it here. But thanks for having me on. Have a great day at work. And thanks to all the people that was listening. Thank you.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Like I said, really, you know, sad to hear that loss, man. Keep your head up. It's definitely, it's got to be really rough, man. But anyway, enjoy the weekend, guys. Like I said, Jesse Hart, Joe Smith Jr., variety of fights, Clarissa Shields returns, Munguia making his 160 debut against Sullivan. Hopefully that's a brawl. We're going to get out of here. Enjoy the fights. We'll be back next weekend, and we won't be back on Thursday. We'll be back, you know, more early in the week like normal. Take it easy. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that